Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. This is your host, Mitch. And we are here by popular request. Oftentimes we do not record post Champions League. We let that be the normal end of week pod. But, you know, people have been clamoring for it. So I'm here with Coach today to oblige. Hi, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank you for the request, guys. It was in the pipeline, but then more than enough people asked. So I was like, yeah, why not? Like, you guys are great, so why not? You know.
And what a better way to start a podcast about a game that brought us such good vibes by asking a question that maybe will have a good or bad answer. I don't know. But Coach, our question of the day today is: when is the last time you cried?
It got me thinking, because obviously we saw Simeone crying yesterday, which was nice. Guys, you can't.
Sorry, well, Pip has something to say.
Yeah, we can hear Pip. We can also see him as well for you guys watching on YouTube, and his butt as well. But okay, whatever. Last time I cried, that's a really good question. I think. When did Transformers 1 come out? Was it this year or last year? It was last year, wasn't it?
The what come out?
Transformers 1, the actual animated one of Chris Hemsworth. It was last year.
Transformers 1?
1, as in O-N-E.
Oh, the like movie.
Yeah.
I don't know when that came out.
Okay. I'm actually joking, by the way, guys. It wasn't then. Maybe. I didn't actually cry. But there was maybe a solitary tear. When I got engaged, I think it was like a solitary tear, I want to say.
I was going to at least tee up of like, the next time you cry surely is when you get married, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, no, man, because I'm a thug, so that, you know, we don't do that. You know,
you got to at least be like have some miss to you, you know? You got to have some sort of emotion happening. You can't be stonewalling.
I'm more like laughing like, God damn, I actually tricked someone into marrying me, man. I'm actually the goat. You know? So, what about you, last time you cried?
I get like emotional a lot when I like will watch like shows or movies or something. But I can tell you with a guarantee of like when the next time I cry will be, and that is when Arsenal win the Champions League and Premier League. That I will absolutely be crying when that happens. So
roughly 7-ish months time is the next time.
Yeah, I can guarantee you some tears will happen in seven months. Which I set myself up for a wonderful segue. Let's get right into the pod. Before we do, real quick, I just want to remind you all to like, share, and subscribe to the Shirtless Plantain Show. We appreciate all of you guys' support. And we're gonna dive into the lineup here, Coach. The big changes from the weekend were Miles Lewis-Skelly and Martinelli coming in for Calafiori and Trossard. Yeah. Any surprises for you here?
A weird part of me thought that Wanyeri might come in as well. But, yeah, that didn't happen. I think the Martinelli start was probably a bit of a shock for me, only because the type of game I expected wasn't the game I thought would be set up for him to start. I thought it would be better for him to come on, but I know nothing, guys. So, yeah, that was probably the biggest shock for me. Outside of that, pretty much as expected, I'd say.
I think I'm the opposite. I think I was more surprised by Miles Lewis-Skelly. Calafiori's really? Been in such good form, but I also understand wanting to rest him a little bit. He definitely struggled with fitness last year, and so having an option that we can bring in like Miles Lewis-Skelly is nothing to complain about, because I love watching Calafiori. He brings so much chaos, and he is so much fun to watch. But, oh my God, I love Miles Lewis-Skelly. Yeah, he is such a fucking great player. these two ended up changing the game later, which we will get to. But what was your expectations going into this game? Obviously, these are two sides with certain reputations around them for their abilities in defense. So as someone who is going to the game, were you expecting four goals to be scored?
I expected an open game, but I just thought it'd be a more open game because we're forcing it, which is what we got, but I didn't expect Atleti to be that open. Even though I'm well aware of this current Atleti. Like, this current Atleti is not the one of yesteryear. You know what I mean? They haven't been that side probably since Diego Godin left, which was in like 2019 or 2020, I want to say. That's a good 5 years now. But people are still stuck on that sort of stigma of them, you know, being this side that will just, you know, park the bus and then just hit you on the counter. They've been putting up whoopings and getting whoopings themselves for what? They put five past Real Madrid like 2 weeks ago. So my expectation was very much open game, some good football. I thought Alvarez, which I thought was good, but I thought Alvarez would obviously, you know, have an effect on the game. But yeah, if you've watched both teams in the last 4 years, you wouldn't be sitting there thinking, oh yeah, these teams are going to stink it up. It's going to be a close game. You'd be thinking, potential for an all-timer tonight. And it was for us. So yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Let's get into the game. You were obviously there. So how was the atmosphere at the beginning of this game?
I was shocked. Genuinely shocked. I wouldn't say I was running late because obviously I made it. I was there well in time for kickoff and stuff. But usually, obviously I like taking like pre-match photos and whatnot, like doing some portraits and stuff like that with people. So I like to get there like just probably over an hour before the game kicks off. But I was like, you know, running significantly later than I wanted to. So, but it didn't feel like a big game. Do you know what I mean? It didn't, like, to me at least, it didn't feel like a big game. It just felt like a Champions League night against a good side, but nothing too crazy. I missed the light show as well, but it is what it is. And then I got in my seat and then I was like, hang on a second, like, this doesn't feel right. Like, the crowd were up for it. Absolutely up for it. And it didn't stop. It didn't, like, literally for the 90, there was obviously little down periods, but this is as good as it sounded the entire season. Seriously. Like, I think I might have missed two or three home games this season so far. This is the best atmosphere in the stadium by far this season. Like, it was, yeah.
That's pretty amazing to hear. I think night games in particular, and this isn't even exclusive to Arsenal. I think this is just sports in general. Yeah. A night game brings out, everyone's pumped. Like anytime that I go to a Broncos game or anytime I've been to like a college football game or like soccer games here, if it's at night, it's like a different feeling. And so I think that the crowd brings it a little bit more. I mean, the team definitely brought it to start this game. We had a very, very good tempo to start this game. And I would say in general, the entire first half, we played very, very well. Actually, unlucky not to get a goal and to go into the half 0-0. We played like we were significantly better than them to start the game. Is that how you?
Yeah, I think, you know, I had to correct myself. Sorry, I've only missed one home game this season so far. Sorry. Felt like it was, but I was kind of away games clearly. But yeah, I think usually, especially when you're playing a team that's, you know, they've got players that can hurt you, they're a good side, usually Arsenal will kind of fill them out a little bit. There was none of that yesterday. We knew from the outset, yeah, you've got Alvarez, yeah, you've got, you know, Koke was really, I thought Koke was actually quite good yesterday, but he's obviously, you know, on the towards the end of his career now. But there was none of that respect. It was just, okay, you got good players, but we've got a bunch of, you know, napalm here. So do your worst, basically. And it was just aggressive, balls moving at a good tempo. We played a very, very high line. I'm still curious to see just how high it was yesterday, but it was very, very high. There was no fear of what they can do in behind us. That was what I noticed from the opening exchanges for sure.
Absolutely. First big chance of the game was an Eze shot followed by a Rice follow-up that neither made it in, but Eze hits the crossbar. Yeah. Do you think Eze should have passed it out to Saka there?
No. No. I understand deferring to our best player. I get all that. But he's our best player clearly, but I don't feel like the gap between him and, you know, our next best players or whatever else is so huge, where it's like, if they've got a good look, you know, it's not like, for example, I don't know, Salah compared to the rest of his teammates, if you know what I mean, pre-Izak, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if Eze's got a chance to shoot outside the box, it's Eze, bro.
Yeah, I think I'm with you more so than anything, not because like, oh, he should have passed to our best player, but like, I do think Saka's a good option there because of like, I think he was mostly running free.
Yeah.
But also Eze has yet to score his first goal in a non-Port Vale match. So I think he is kind of itching to like take those shots where it's like, I know I can score from here. I know I can fucking do it. I'm going to take this hit. Mm-hmm. And even though it gets deflected, it still almost goes in, which is very impressive. Honestly, I'm more than anything disappointed with Rice there. I think he's better on a volley than he showed in that play. Yeah. He just drives it into the ground and it goes over the bar.
Yeah. I mean, I thought usually from that position, because Rice has scored a goal like in the Champions League before from that position as well. It was a layoff from Havertz. I forgot who he was against. But yeah, so I was thinking, yeah, that should have been a goal, but not mad at it. I'm very big on shooting when, with this Arsenal team, when it's not a likely sort of outcome, but anything can come from it, and something almost did come from it. You know, the more you shoot, you know, you buy a lottery ticket, the more chance you can get something from it. So Rice, you know, probably should have done better, but again, that's our attacking intent. There's no more sort of wait for the perfect chance, make sure we're set defensively before we actually get. We're there now. You know, what's the saying? Go, we're here, we're queer, get used to it, you know?
I don't know if that's one-to-one, Coach. I don't know if it is. All right, well, I'm going to try to right the ship from that. We're going to move on to Atletico's very, very good chance.
Yeah.
David Raya forgets what he's doing for a second.
Yeah.
And I have watched that play multiple times, and every time I've watched it, I don't know what the fuck he's thinking. Are you able to get in the head of David Raya in that moment?
Oh, yeah. The battery on the controller died. That was all that happened.
Yeah.
That was literally all that. Battery and controller died. Happens to me all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, mid-match, you're like, shit. And he's like, oh, my God. And then, you know, thankfully, this is not an online match on FIFA where they always score when something like that happens. You know, this is a real-life match. So Alvarez's wonderful left foot, even though he's right-footed, didn't hit the target this time. But that's what it was. It was a brain fart. And Raya is susceptible to that, like, one every 15 games, basically, which is not a bad ratio. Just don't do it in the Champions League at 0-0, please.
It's a very good sign for this Arsenal team that goal did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because
I know exactly
last year, that's a goal.
It's flying.
Absolutely a goal. It's like truly the most Arsenal goal you could concede in this moment, because we were absolutely the better team in this first half. Up until this play and after this play, we were the better team. And it would be such an Arsenal thing to do to have some dumb fucking individual error that leads to a goal from someone like David Raya, who's usually so composed. Thankfully, it did not lead to one. And Arsenal shortly later put the ball in the back of the net. Unfortunately, it did not count. But Zubimendi has a great turnover in midfield, gets it to Saka, gets it to Martinelli, who unfortunately times his run poorly. I don't want to talk about Saka or Martinelli here. I want to talk about Martin Zubimendi because I thought he was wonderful. I thought he was absolutely wonderful in this game. And plays like that are exactly why I thought he played so well, of like being able to win the ball so high up the field and then find an incisive pass to Saka is what makes Martin Zubimendi so good. Now, I know you were a little bit disappointed by Martin Zubimendi in this game.
Initially, yeah. So on my instant reaction, and I've been corrected multiple times, I did say that I'd be rewatching the game, and I have rewatched large portions of it. And I've also watched an actual highlight package of his as well. And my main issue, pretty much from the outset, was volume more than anything. Like, Martin Zubimendi completed like 40 plus passes today. I think it was like 42 passes. And for a player of his style, I'm just like, no, there should be like 20, 30 more of those things, basically. But I also accept that this Arsenal team is Arsenal team is ever evolving and roles change and, you know, everything else sort of thing. But even then, with how dominant we were, I was thinking, yeah, like, you know, central penetration, him punching it through the lines, doing what he did for that chance, you know, a bit more often and stuff. That was really, it was just more of, I wanted more from him rather than he actually played like badly or anything. But even then, with the offside goal, what he did to take the ball infield and then quickly, you know, get it through to Saka, that is, it's a basic thing, but it essentially creates the chance. If he doesn't do that, the angle goes. You know, little subtleties like that are just, it pleases me so much because it tells me that the players are fully aware of the context that they're in that situation. Because some players will just carry on driving and it's just like, oh, okay, it should go through there, but how have I affected the situation to make sure it does go through more than anything? Do you get what I mean? So these are all incredibly intelligent players. They're all in sync with each other. And Zubimendi might be the smartest one out of all of them, you know? So, really, even though it was offside, I'm really pleased with how it happened. And it's a repeatable action. Again, this is what we want, stuff that we can consistently do over and over and over again. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a little bit about Eze earlier, but what did you think of his performance, particularly in the first half?
Yeah, this, I suppose it's linked to the Zubimendi, my Zubimendi sort of observation as well. Eze standing in the block, like, that's what he does in this Arsenal team, which is a good thing because he's not wedded to the right-hand side like an Odegaard would be. Do you know what I mean? He's not wedded to the right-hand, to the left-hand side the way Rice would be. So it's good, you know, he commits players, he makes them have to mark him. It's just that he was literally surrounded by four players a lot of the time. Whenever he did get the ball and he could turn and face, it looked like we can make something happen, but it didn't happen enough for me. And I, you know, it's not all on Zubimendi, but I was expecting him to be able to find him a lot more, but I don't think that was, on reflection, I don't really think that was even the intention. A lot of the time, considering, you know, a lot of what I observed was Arsenal building up in a 3-4-3 at times. And in the middle of that three at the back was Zubimendi. He's miles away from Eze, basically, in that build up. So it's not really all on him. But I think a positive is that he was engaged a lot. He was engaging players even when he didn't have the ball. But I definitely do think his style of play at Palace is still kind of there with us, which is not a bad thing, but it's just like, you're going to get more of the ball at Arsenal, so, you know.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would like to see him get on the ball more. Like, a thing I really like from Odegaard is that he drops deeper to receive the ball, and more touches from your creative players is never a bad thing. So I think I'd like to see more on that. You touch on the build-up. There was also times when Rice would go back into left back as Miles inverted up to midfield. Atletico were playing this game like they did not watch film. They were acting like they've never seen an inverted fullback before, which gave us basically we had a numerical advantage
everywhere
at all times at every phase of the game because they kind of just didn't know what to do with Miles Lewis-Skelly. It's like it's like they were only watching Calafiori tape, and so when they're just like, oh, there's going to be a chaos guy here.
Yeah.
And then when Miles is like basically playing as a fourth midfielder, it's like, oh, what do we do with this?
Basically.
I'm liking the kind of like variety that we're able to throw out there with these different players. Obviously, Eze's bringing something than Odegaard brings. Zubimendi brings something different than Rice brings in the six. Miles brings something different than Calafiori. And it's great that we're able to bring all of these different looks. I mean, like, this squad has never been deeper. And it feels like everything is really starting to click into place for everyone of, like, I understand what my role is in the team. I understand, like, what I have to do well in this system. And it's not even a one-size-fits-all. It's not this is what our left back does. This is what our six does. It's each player adapting to each other and kind of understanding each other more. And it's only going to make us harder to defend and score more goals and continue to defend very well. So I'm very excited to see where it can go as everyone gets more and more comfortable in this team.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the fact that you picked up on the fact that there's no sort of one solution to how we want to play or how a player should interpret the position that they're filling in or whatever. it makes it really hard for teams to prep for us. And Arteta's banged the drum from day one about, you know, he wants us to be good at everything. It's, we're going to get to it, obviously, but it's just highly ironic that the set pieces is what people are just talking about. It's just like, you're missing out on so much fun if you just open your eyes a little bit more. You know, it's like the set pieces are great, wonderful. And even then, I've got thoughts on that as well. But you don't get that much territorial dominance and get the chance to score for set pieces if you're not really good at the other shit. You know, like, it's not like we're launching it long and just hoping for flick-ons. It's not that. If you watch 10 minutes of an Arsenal game. But yeah, like, against a team like Atletico Madrid, these sorts of margins, and one of their players, I think, spoke about after, said, these sorts of margins, they have to kind of go for you in these games for you to build your momentum. And he was just like, the margins didn't go for us. But it's like, those margins are going for us because we're committing and we're taking chances. Do you know what I mean? And we're suffocating teams. So stuff should fall for you more often than not if you're going to take those chances. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, Arsenal scored 4 goals in this game, and we will get to those goals. But 2 players that did not get a goal or assist in this game are our right side, which is usually where we are very dependent of Bukayo Saka and Yurian Timber. However, I think they both were wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think about Bukayo and Yurian Timber's performance in this game?
So I'm not going to, you know, take the low-hanging fruit and talk about comparing Timber to other right-backs, especially right-backs at cheating clubs. But what I will say is there is a player there that has had all the tools from day one and has shown glimpses of them, but it's now he's putting them together pretty much in every single game that he plays for us. Like, you're seeing Timber's full repertoire of skill every single game. It's, you know, it's quite hard to be able to do that as a footballer, right? Where all of your positives, you're just expressing them on and off the ball every game. Like, that is incredibly impressive. Like, even some of the best players don't get to always do that every game, but Timber just seems to be showing us everything every game. And yeah, like, he's, you're not going to beat him 1v1, strong as a ball. His offensive game is actually getting a lot better, and I think it's very underrated at the fact that when we do have set pieces, he's genuinely a threat, but teams are gravitating towards Saliba and obviously Gabriel. But Timber's got like 3 or 4 goals since last season from set pieces. You know, so yep. He's just fantastic. Saka, I don't know what else to say other than he's one of one. I don't know what else to say about him, man. He's our best player, the best player in the league. He's gonna crack the top 10 in the Ballon d'Or, maybe even the top 5 in the Ballon d'Or, like, you know, next year. I'm so certain of it. We don't care about that award, obviously, but he's just too good not to. He's just generally too good not to. Like, I can talk about all of these great technical skills and his intelligence and decision making, but just watch him. Just watch Saka, man. Seriously.
I will say for one sec, because obviously, fucking love Bukayo Saka. Mm. He's incredible. I want more from him.
Goal, 100%.
Yeah. I want more from him. I want him to put up Salah numbers.
Mm.
I think he can, and I think he should. So like a game like yesterday where he was phenomenal but didn't score, that's great. I need him to, I want him to be a level of player where it's just like inevitability of he is going to score every fucking game. And that is not a criticism, that is just an expectation of like, hey, we've been treating Saka like, well, he's one of the best players in the world. I want him to put up the stats that like back that up, of like 30 goals and assists in all competitions kind of thing. Is like impressive number. Obviously, he missed a lot of time last year, missed a little bit of time this year, but I think he can do it. He's that fucking good. So I hope he continues to play very, very well.
Just before we go away from Saka, I noticed yesterday as well, a lot of these runs were in behind. Like, I was concerned about his hamstrings. I was thinking, is he going to adapt his style a little bit, even though he's still 24? But he's making full sprints in behind consistently. Like, he's just going for it. And when he's taking on his man as well, he's going on the outside as well, which is, again, more of a running game. And the midfielders are responding to it. They're seeing him running behind him like, we're going to find you. I think he had a chance in the first half as well from an Eze pass, if I remember correctly, as well, where again, he's made a straight line run, sprinting behind, Eze's found him, Oblak has come out, kind of thing.
Yes.
Cleared him up, but he saved the ball as well. Those are things that I was worried about after the surgery, that will he still be capable of doing that? He's fine. Saka's yep. fine.
100%. Know, so in the first half, it felt very dominant.
Mm-hmm.
We outshot them 9-2, but we really only created a couple openings. We only had a 0.6 on XG. Were you concerned at all going into halftime that we didn't get a goal? Or were you feeling good just based on what you saw?
I'm always going to be nervous when the other team's got Julian Alvarez, to be honest. Like, even though we're super dominant, he's just one of those players that he's a game breaker. He'll break the game. He'll break the game and you're pissed. You're like, oh shit, like, they're a goal up out of nothing because he's that good. And now the whole context of the game has changed. Now we have to essentially fight uphill rather than fight downhill. So yeah, that was it really. But outside of that, like I said, like the players, I'm confident the Athletic players knew that they were getting spanked tonight one way or another. But you know, when you've got Alvarez in your team, the context can change at any time. But yeah, I wasn't particularly worried. It was just more about his individual quality that I was like, just keep an eye on this guy. And I think early in the second half, he showed
took my transition for me.
Yeah.
Early in the second half, Atleti kind of woke up a little bit.
Yeah.
Alvarez hits the bar. Up until that point, what do you think changed in Arsenal where we came out sluggish into the second half?
Yeah, I just think there was an emphasis. I can't say we were sluggish. It was more of a, oh, okay, this game, there's goals here for us kind of thing. And we almost kind of forgot that they still have this guy here. And there's even instances in the first half where he's got the ball, he's picked up, and nobody wants to tackle him because they're fearful of if he gets past, you know, we're in trouble. But there was definitely more aggression there. And I think, you know, the ball was moving at a good pace in the first, but I think we even upped it. You know, in particular, Martinelli as well, like, he was taking a lot more touches and committing players more as well. And it's like, when you have that dual threat of, you really know Saka's going to do that, and then you have Martinelli now having the confidence to do that as well, those sorts of things matter because you pull players out of position, you commit them, you know, you go past one player, somebody else has to come and try and tackle you, so then some more space opens up and stuff like that, and then they're a little bit rattled at that point. So I think it was just more of commitment to committing players, but also just being aggressive with your movements as well, and you know, throwing, you know, maybe an extra body forward as well, more than anything. So yeah
for sure. Now let's get to the fun part, why don't we? We started scoring some fucking goals.
Yeah.
And what other way can Arsenal score a goal but the way that they're ruining the sport, everyone? Yeah. A set yeah. piece. Yeah. How dare we do that, coach? What can we do about this? Like, do we need to just ban set pieces? I think so.
Yeah, I think that's, well, what we could do when the other team fouls one of our players, how about we just give them the foul so that we don't get an attacking set piece? And when they kick the ball out for a corner, how about we just give them a corner in themselves, not us.
Yeah,
you know, we just give them the corner instead. You know,
yeah.
I think that's because, you know, I think that's fairer more than anything.
Yeah, like make Jover's job harder. You know, yeah. Of like, how are we going to score on a defensive set piece? Like, have you thought about that, Nicholas? Your job seems boring, man.
Spoiler, he actually has, but anyway.
But I just don't know if there's like a player more inevitable on a set piece in the sport than Gabriel at this point. He feels like just one of those like absolute like freaks of NFL wide receivers that are just like bigger than every corner they ever come across, where it's just like, yeah, man, you throw up a jump ball, he's getting it every time. That's how Gabriel feels on corners. And for whatever reason, when I was watching this replay, he seemingly goes unmarked.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy decision by Atletico Madrid. I would be putting two guys on him that do not move within 2 feet of him.
You're
going to
need more than two. So.
Like, at minimum.
Yeah.
Like, they were playing almost like a zone on him, and he just runs free. And it's like, you can't afford to do that. Yeah. And also, credit to Declan Rice. Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah. These balls that he's putting in on these set pieces are absolutely demonic. And this isn't even his worst one or his craziest one of the game.
No. No, I think, do you know what, actually, the fact you brought up Declan Rice and we spent, you know, probably the last couple minutes waxing lyrical about Gabriel.
It's quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary, not valid for McDelivery.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It's very much a chicken and egg situation here. What makes us so dangerous from set pieces? Is it Gabriel's just ridiculous aerial dominance and the gravity and panic that he causes? Or is it Declan Rice's delivery? Is it Saka's delivery? Is it Odegaard's delivery? Like, what is it? Like, you know, is it one or the other? Because to me, to my mind, I definitely feel like both have similar sort of effects and importance. But I'm leaning more towards Gabriel because you can put in great balls all day, but if you haven't got someone that can consistently attack them, But again, it all starts from Jova getting the credit for setting up these plays, but you've got to have the plays to execute it. It's that simple. So
yeah, I think with the conversation of like who gets the credit, obviously Saka and Rice put in some incredible set pieces, but there's a reason that our set piece production kind of fell off a cliff last season when Gabriel got hurt. Like, obviously Saliba is a very, very good defender. He is not as good in the air as Gabriel is, and it's truly not close, which is one of the reasons they complement each other so well and are such a good center back pairing. But it was an unbelievably impressive goal, and it just immediately cracked this game open.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easy to say with hindsight of like we score three more of these, but you felt Atletico's heads drop, and well, actually, that is not entirely true. I felt like Atletico looked really, really good after the first goal happened.
They did.
Like, there was Gabriel, an immediate run of pressure.
Yeah, Gabriel celebrated his block on the shot harder than he celebrated his goal.
Yes,
like, straight away. So yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's what can happen with, especially at top level football. You can be in control, you can go ahead, and then all of a sudden you're pegged back straight away, and you're just like, yeah, pip, bro.
Can we not do this today, man? Can we fucking relax? Jesus, I'm so sorry that my audio is just gonna be shit for the rest of time because I have a cat that needs my attention at all times, bro. Relax. Do you have something to say? Are you going to hit me again because you want to get on camera? Stop. Fucking relax.
Is he one yet? He's not 1 year, is he?
No, he is still a baby. He will be one in February, and maybe he'll chill the fuck out. Maybe I'll get good at podcasting again in February when I'm not getting bit by a kitten.
As someone that owns a cat that's going to be 8 in February, they don't change, especially
great.
Bones. Yeah, they
didn't. Fucked.
Yeah.
All right. let's move on to the second goal, which was my favorite of the game. It's just one of my favorites of the season, I think. Miles Lewis-Skelly just carrying the ball the entire way upfield and then finding Martinelli out wide, who just does a beautiful one touch into the back corner. Beautiful run, beautiful pass, beautiful finish. Everything about that, beautiful celebration too. Yeah. I love this like thing that Martinelli's been doing. Yeah. It's a good signature celebration.
Yeah.
Everything about it's been wonderful, and I love Gabriel Martinelli fully being back. I love him being a good soccer player again.
Yeah. I suppose there was talk of last season of, you know, what left back do you pair with Martinelli when he has to play? Because we're like, well, you know, how do we get the best out of him? How do we quote unquote unlock him and all this shit kind of thing? And Martinelli's had good games with MLS. He's had good games with Calafiori this season already. I just think in the first half, he was a little bit, don't get me wrong, he wasn't being utilized as much. He was making a lot of good forward runs, but he wasn't also just getting the ball as much as well, but he wasn't playing that well. But second half, he woke up. He won the foul for our opener, and obviously scored the goal that essentially, I think, made the game safe for us. But MLS's run is, that's what he does. That, go back and watch any of his games for the under 19s or whatever and whatever else. He makes that sort of run maybe twice, maybe three times a game. He's that good at it. And the fact that it's translated to the men's game, to the highest level in the Champions League, the guy can do anything. Like, MLS can actually just do anything that he wants. On the finish for Martinelli, someone brought up the fact that it was, you know, if that was Donnarumma, he probably saves it. And you're probably right, you know, but it wasn't Donnarumma. And, you know, I hope we play PSG again, because Chevalier, love him. He was the best goalkeeper in League One last year. But he's not Donnarumma. Like, if we shoot like that against Chevalier, like, we're going to put a few past him, I think. But yeah, I'm just really pleased for Martinelli. And I think he's just adapting to this rotational role that I think gets the best out of him. It works best for him. It works best for us, you know?
Yeah, I think we're seeing, like, a lot of players kind of forcing themselves to step up their game because there's so much competition for places.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Martinelli knows that there is multiple players who play his position where if he goes on a run of form like he has the last 2 years, it's him not seeing the field because Trossard can play there, because Eze can play there, because Manueke can play there. Like, he's not the only left winger anymore. And far from it, in fact. And I think that has motivated him a lot, and he looks like a better player. It's great. I'm so pleased for him because I love him so much. And I'm glad that I didn't sell my stocks.
Yeah. I'll never remove.
No, absolutely. I'll go down with the fucking ship. let's move on to our third goal. Mr. Victor Gyökeres gets on the score sheet. You didn't get the honor of being able to watch this game on TV, where they were reminding you that Gyökeres has not scored for 9 games, a club or a country, at every waking opportunity. And he shut them the fuck up today, or yesterday, because he scored twice. Neither of them pretty. I don't care. No. I truly do not give a shit. First one manages to get the ball out from under his feet and put it in the back of the net. It was not pretty, but I, again, don't care. As long as your striker is fine in the back of the net, that's all I care about. But I was impressed by other parts of Gyökeres' game yesterday. Yeah. Obviously, when you're a striker, all that matters is you scoring. Yeah. You scoring twice means you get a Man of the Match award, even though he wasn't our best player yesterday. However, I was very thrilled that he didn't look as much like a baby giraffe yesterday when he was dribbling. There was moments where he was, I think, more impressive on the ball than I've seen. And I think I've seen more of that in the Champions League than I have in the Premier League. There's been more chances where he's been able to like size up a defender and really go shoulder to shoulder with them, and has been able to control the ball a little bit better in those scenarios than he has in the Prem. But I was very much impressed with like how he looked on the ball. Mm-hmm. Just taking away his goal scoring, and then you add in the fact that he scored 2 goals, and it's like, yes, this is the guy we saw.
You know, just on his technicality, he's not going to get any better technically in terms of like an astronomical improvement, but I've seen small increments, you know, this season of him improving little bits that just, you know, make his game, make it easier for him to play for us. You know, I won't skip ahead to the fourth goal, but essentially we scored that fourth goal because of him being able to control the ball, shake his guy, you know, with a good drop of the shoulder, and then win a corner, basically. But even in the first half, he was doing stuff. I was like, you do more of this, you'll score more, we'll score more, sort of thing. And then on top of that as well, it's just, it allows us to sustain more pressure, because at times, even though we're really good at winning the ball back, the ball go up to him and it might just come straight back to us, basically. It's just like, that's not helpful. Yesterday, he was winning fouls. He was winning the, you know, to bring up an NFL analogy, he was getting the first downs. Do you know what I mean? And he
absolutely.
And on top of that as well, I feel like there's more confidence there. But his actual goal itself, in fact, both of them, to be fair, that's what I envisage a lot of his goals to look like. Not exactly one-to-one copy, but in and around a six-yard box, one-touch finishes where you're there because you've got the nose, you've got good ball striking and stuff. I don't expect him to score that Leeds goal every week. I don't expect him to score goals the way Haaland would, for example. You know, he's, for us, I think he can be a really good box striker and do some decent work outside the box. But outside, my expectations for him to, you know, be a complete forward are just non-existent. And that's not a bad thing. I kind of know what he is, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
I absolutely agree with that. He scores a second goal a little bit later on a set piece, almost identical to Trossard's goal versus Fulham, because it's to Gabriel who heads it across the goal, and he doesn't have to do much. He's just there, and it hits him. And I think one thing I want to talk about with this one is just like, I think the first one, he was like a little hesitant to celebrate because he wasn't sure if it was gonna like get called off or something like that. Second goal immediately does the celebration, and I think I was just very happy to see how happy his teammates were for him.
Yeah,
like this team has incredible vibes this year, and it's a really really wonderful time to be an Arsenal fan. It just makes me very very happy.
Yeah, I think even the vibe in the stadium was like, we cheered his goals louder than anybody else's, for sure. Like, I hope that came across on the TV. But I think for him, I kind of feel like he still feels like he's got to prove himself. Like he's feeling that himself. Like he sees some of the anxiety in his play sometimes. It's like, you've already been accepted. I think a lot of time when a player signs for Arsenal, kind of thing, like Eze doesn't have to worry about that. He already knows what it is. He already knows Haaland and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So for him, it was just essentially he was coming home. But the expectation of him, he's got the 14 shirt. You know what I mean? Like he is the striker we've trusted to help us get over the line. Whether people want to admit it or not, he might not be the one that a lot of people wanted, kind of thing. He might not have been the one that Arteta even saw as the one, kind of thing. But the simple fact is he's there. He's the one that we've bought at a time where we're trying to win now. So he's going to be the face of it, if that makes sense. So I feel like he's probably aware of those sorts of things. But he's, to be frank, he's working his ass off. And I think that's all you can ask for. Like, he's genuinely working his ass off. And I always respect that. You know, same thing with Havertz. Let me be clear. I liked Havertz from before, when he was even in Germany, kind of thing. So it's easier for me to obviously take him, even though I thought like he was rubbish at Chelsea. But Rioja is, from day one, he's just kind of earned my respect just by the way that he's just trying his ass off, you know. But I think the funniest thing about his second goal was the fact that Lenormand realised it was going to be a corner, and he's scrambling to try to stop it from going out for a corner. And we already knew what was happening next after that, you know. So, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Shortly after that, we brought on some subs. Wanyeri came on, Norgaard came on, White came on, Mosquera came on, and Mikel Merino, our backup striker, came on for Gyökeres. I think the one of those, by that time we were in cruise control mode, already up 4-0. I think the one player that impressed me in that group after coming on was Ethan Wanyeri. But I do want to say, hey, Ben White's not dead. He's alive.
the fallout from, you know, when the fact that, oh yeah, he missed the training session, it was just like, guys, relax. Like, that's actually like, oh, he sacrificed himself for nothing. Oh, look, it's like, just put your big boy pants on, guys. It's, you know, we've got a big squad and we don't have to, like, you should be glad that it's an option for us to stand him down, basically. Like, we're doing it because we can. Same way that Mosquera came in for Gabriel because we can. Like, Gabriel felt something, obviously, but we took it. It happened in the last Champions League game as well, if I remember correctly, against Olympiacos. Came off, felt something, he came off, and that was it. We've got the option to do it now, so don't be upset, you know, when players are, we're not taking chances with players. Ben White, for his first 3 years at Arsenal, barely missed a game. 23-24, he played most of that injured, but he was fantastic anyway. And that's what he's trying to recover from now. So, yeah, like, just be glad. Just genuinely be glad that we have the option to do that. And Ben White is, like I said, is very much alive. He's going to contribute a lot this season, guys. Just you wait on it, for sure.
For sure. You have a note in here that says, Simeone crying. I instead want to talk about what he said after the game, which is, him saying that we were incredible and one of the best teams in Europe. Is that what you're referring to?
No, he was crying on the sideline, bro. Literally.
I think I may have missed that.
The whole picture of it, like, it's flying around the internet, but literally the score's 4-0 and he's got, his eyes are quite literally welled up. And we already know he's an intense manager and shit. Probably the only manager in the world more intense than Arteta. But yeah, that was a sight to see for sure, man. But I also think that, you know, when you're well beaten, you just have to sort of, you've got nowhere to hide, basically. You have to essentially say what happened, you know, like the same way Pep admitted that, oh, it wasn't my intention to park the bus, but sometimes another team is just better than you. You got to do what you got to do. My biggest fear, to be honest, yesterday was Simeone, you know, having a meme, but the meme is him essentially dunking on us, you know, him grabbing these balls and shit like he did to Madrid one time. Like, and I'm glad we obviously didn't let him do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Anytime you power down a big personality into kind of a shell of themselves, it always feels good. We create a lot of big chances in this second half, and we doubled our XG in the second half. Obviously, we felt pretty good about the first half, but anytime you can put 4 goals in 13 minutes in against a team like Atletico, it's got to feel good. How did you feel just on our chance creation in the second half?
Yeah, intentional. The forward. So, Jokeris's first goal, Martinelli's run wasn't ignored. You know what I mean? Like, Mr. No Angle Bias. Zubimendi gets the ball on his left foot and just wraps a really nice ball over the top for Martinelli to put it in first time. You know what I mean? Like, our forward runs are not being ignored. The players are actually making a lot more forward runs. Whether it's Saka or Martinelli, our fullbacks are taking up unconventional positions that are just making it really hard. I wouldn't call it unconventional. They're awkward. Awkward for teams to essentially understand what's happening. It's very much the same way when a striker will drop in and pick up the ball completely unmarked. For me, we're doing that with our fullback, so it's just like, who's marking him, basically? But he's supposed to be a fullback, so why is he picking up in a number 10 position instead? Do you know what I mean? It's like, that sort of unpredictability, I think, was way more prevalent in the second half. So it allowed us to gain momentum, but also gain territorial advantage as well. Yeah,
for sure. I'm trying to think of, like, I can't emphasize enough how being off Twitter, it does help not having, like, other perceptions from other fan bases. It's much more hyper localized, so I'm not really seeing a wider conversation of, like, what Arteta's reputation when it comes to big games is. So I'm curious, are you thinking that it's shifting? Do you think it's just in general very, very good? What is your thoughts on, like, his big game record?
I think the PSG game last year and the Bayern Munich game, ultimately are the ones that people will obviously still go back to and stuff like that. I just want to say on record that if Five didn't get suspended, for the first leg, I think we beat PSG. Even if we didn't have Havertz. And I think Havertz pretty much guarantees us going through. But I genuinely think there's so many small margins, and Arteta does so well to get us to that position where it's just a margin that essentially decides if we're going to go through or not. But his big game record in general, like, smash Madrid twice, smash Atletico Madrid. Do you know what I mean? Like, our first, like, what is it? A knockout game in Champions League in, 7 years or whatever, got through against Porto. We already know about his big game record in the Premier League for the last 3 years now. Like, he, whether people want to admit it or not, the proof's in the pudding. It's there for everybody to see. What I'm curious about is what happens when, to my mind, we're going to be fighting for the title right up until the end anyway. We might even win it before then. What I'm curious about to see is, let's say we've got a Champions League quarterfinal, semi-final, and then we also have, what do you call it, a big title game, basically, you know, in the same sort of week, 2 week period kind of thing. How we navigate that, to me, that's still a monkey on Arteta's back, because we saw against Aston Villa, when we played Aston Villa between the Bayern Munich games, what happened then. Last season, obviously, was out of the title anyway, but we still sort of chucked the league for the Champions League, and we didn't get it over the line anyway. So for me, those are the next big tests for him. So the big game record against big teams is fine. It's the more about the big game record when shit's really on the line that I just really want to, I'm curious to see how he navigates that. So,
yeah, and I would anticipate this very large amount of depth that we have will be very helpful.
Exactly.
It's insane to me, like, what the puzzle piece is going to look like when everyone's healthy, which, let's be real, it's never going to be the case. Mm. But, like, we've got such a full team that there's going to be a lot of players, like, good players that don't make squads. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how we end up balancing that. We got Palace coming up next this weekend.
Yeah.
Is this home or away?
We're at home. We're at home, yeah.
Okay. Then I'm feeling very good. Selhurst Park always scares me. That's a big bogey fixture, I feel like. But
yeah.
Let's hope we get a win at Palace. How are you feeling? Against Palace, sorry.
To be honest, I'm feeling good. I think last year when we drew against them, we were, again, to my mind, focused on the Champions League. Or I think we might have had Champions League hangover, if I remember correctly. I think we faced them maybe after we went out to PSG, I want to say. But yeah, home games against Palace are always, I think, fun. London derbies are fun. I don't think Palace are coming to park the bus either. They're confident, do you know what I mean? Like, they're a good side. They're a top 10 side in the Premier League, as far as I'm concerned. I feel good. I think, you know, they should be encouraged to come here. They got a 2-2 draw here. And I kind of hope they do open up, because I think it'll be nice on a Super Sunday where, you know, half the world's watching to see us put up a really good statement performance against them, especially the team that they're essentially the team that started off Liverpool's shitty run, if I remember correctly. Was it them?
I don't remember.
It was Palace, Chelsea. Palace, yeah, Chelsea, Galatasaray, United.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
let's hope we get a win. Let's hope we're talking about 3 points on Sunday. Coach, thank you very much. Thank you all, everyone, for listening. Thank you all for telling us to record this episode. And thank you all for liking, subscribing, following us on all of our social channels. And we love you all. Coach, you know what to say.
Peace. And much love to you.
Peace.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.